And Marie couldn't be with us in the studio this week, so she's chosen a repeat program.
Senior Focus.
Welcome, everyone, to this session of Senior Focus. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, your presenter this morning. And we have in the studio with us Bill Rayner, a leader and president of one of the local Grey Power branches across Auckland, and a commentator for community issues for Grey Power. So welcome, Bill.
Thank you.
And Bill's background and heritage is well known to a lot of people in Auckland, and he's also been an advocate for seniors' issues at council over the years, and he's presented a number of times under the formal system of submissions. So today's topic is really the council feedback on the 10-year plan, and I have been submitting on these plans over the last 10 years myself, the annual plan I usually do, and I have a bit of experience of the changes that have gone on in the have your say space, as council refers to it as, where they seek feedback on their deliberations and potential spending. So this submission period started on the 22nd of February and runs to the 22nd of March. So when you are listening to the program, you still have time to go to your local library, and you can get help from the librarians to actually download the Have Your Say document and the way in which you can give your feedback. And it can be in short form, or you can do it online directly and add extra pages in if you've got those computer skills. And if not, the librarians can help. They have also downloaded the 81-page submission document for people to look at. And I noticed in my library it's done in colour, so it's quite effective in a way that you can actually see stuff much more easily than trying to do it yourself online. I noticed how demanding it was to get through 81 pages. Now, we can't focus on that in half an hour, but what we can do is talk about the way the submission process is run. And whereas before it was, if you had a stakeholder relationship with council, if you were someone considered to be representing a group of sizable proportions, you got an opportunity in front of the whole council to talk to all the councillors and the mayor. And my difficulty was at that point was that it became a bit of a lolly scramble as to which councillors would actually come along and listen. And were you being effective? Who were you getting to? And how was it being received? So I actually can see advantages in the new system of Have Your Say, where it's out and about in the community. It's a bit more informal. It's at community markets and places where people can just drop into a stall and put down some thoughts on post-it notes and so on. At least it gets people engaged. But, Bill, you've got some comments that I think would be quite interesting in this space.
Yes, I think, well, it's quite ironic because I've actually come directly from a submission process for the recovery 10-year budget that Anne-Marie was talking about, which was for the key stakeholder groups in the city. And, of course, the point that Anne-Marie has made, it changed. And, of course, she's commenting on the access. It's now sort of casual access, but of course it's not an entertainment exercise. It's a distillation of community concerns and comment and what they want to happen. And it's got to a point where it's almost ineffective, and that's one of the issues I put to the council, because the last annual budget, they only had 4,700 submissions from all of Auckland. That's 1.6 million people. And our local ward only had 143, and that includes all of them, the so-called consultations at the markets and the digital presentations and the pieces of paper that people sent in. And it was pretty well meaningless. And, of course, the other difficulty that you have, if you look at the consultation forms, they're sort of steered towards the sort of preferred outcome that the council wants from the budget. And it's a lot of the questions a bit like what the in the States they call America and Mother and Apple Pie. You know, you're not going to say no. Everybody wants climate change impacts reduced. Everybody wants the, sort of the water quality improved. Everybody wants the environment improved. And so you tick all these things, and of course then the council can pick that up as an approval for the whole budget, which is $4 billion. So it's a bit of a problem. And of course it's not a criticism per se. I mean, it's a $4 billion complex exercise, 600 pages, and I'm quite sure that, you know, the councillors would have great difficulty themselves of comprehending all aspects of it, and for the ordinary layperson in the street it's effectively impossible. And that's just the way it is. It gets back to the problem of Auckland City being too big, and the layers that are there now, particularly for the community, the local boards, only have a very limited sort of impact on the sort of big decisions that are made that impact their areas. So we put forward great, it needs a critical review.
Yes, well, indeed, I would think there would be lots of people saying that sort of thing, because you're not alone, Bill. There's been many people have been making comments about this. I think what some people will find, and it's a bit like the chicken and the egg and what comes first, some people find the strategic stuff too bureaucratic in its language and too abstract, and they struggle to follow it. And I admittedly, I was reading at night on my computer, but I struggled with some pages in it. Not everything on every page, but just some bits, because I wasn't clear. I thought they were ambiguous statements. I thought they could be interpreted different ways. And then I came across some pages where there was language used that was clearly a localised example with quite detailed information about how they were going to change fines for animal management. Mm. And I thought, this isn't the strategic stuff belonging to a big budget umbrella overview of where the city's going. I don't want to know about this. Well, you know, I don't really think I should be reading this in this document. This isn't, you know, we've done the dog bylaws ages ago. If they need modification, let's modify them. But if this is an example of cost-cutting or bringing in more revenue because we're going to charge people more fines over certain ways they do or don't look after their dogs, I just thought, this is nuts.
Well, what's the point, Minnie? Because you've got to recognise you're a social scientist, and most people, all they're concerned about is that the water comes out of the tap, the buses come on time, the playing fields are there for their kids in their parks, the grass is cut, and the rates aren't too high. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's they expect their local councils to do those sort of things, take the rubbish away and create the roads, and they're not concerned about the higher policy inputs and levels and things like that. And that's the point. When they used to have the old sort of councils, the 11 or whatever they were, and that used to happen. The councillors knew every pothole, and you could talk to your councillor if Moana Avenue had ever probably fixed in a week. Mm. And, of course, that's what we talked about before, too. The other problem now is a contracting out of all the sort of various services right across the board. You don't have direct council staff responsible for a lot of the activities. It's a two-tier or even a three-tier process, which, once again, just hinders the sheer communication. Because I was actually on the East Coast Bay City Council as the chairman of Parks and Reserves, and you go out there and the chief engineer, you go out there on a Saturday morning, look at it, and just decide it'd be fixed. Whereas now, and of course, compounding that is the modern attitude towards governance and management, that sort of Chinese wall, where people that are in a governance position can't sort of get involved in the practical management side, which is a nonsense too. So sort of you get another barrier there. It's sort of, I think it's all part of the modern, what they call it, the woke culture, you know, sort of.
Well, I could give some examples. I mean, there are toilet blocks being replaced at various points across the city, and what would have been a simple exercise in the past that might have cost up to, say, $150,000 is suddenly $500,000 or even $1 million, because it's got to have designer fronts and it's got to have some iwi design on the front and it's got to have this and that. And, you know, it's just all got out of hand. But even just a mural, a basic mural to replace paint that was warped and peeling, and the surface on the toilet block was totally inadequate. So this refurbished toilet block was going to cost $11,000.
Well, that's
and really... most of that was the mural, and I just thought this was ridiculous. What? So I do think there is a sort of sense in which some of the rarefied costs and the ways in which budgets are worked out for some of these projects, I know that there are local people who could band together and who could do things in a community spirit, and it could be done for, you know, an eighth of the price.
That's how it used to be, because one of the things that intrigued me, talking about that, I remember just a year or two back, one of the playgrounds in South Auckland, we found out one of the swings was sort of needed repair, so they took it away. They closed all the other 90 health and safety issues, and of course they're simple things. I mean, your local Rotary Club, as you say, could have gone round and sort of fixed it, and it just seemed weird, that sort of that overreaction. And of course it's the corporatised thing again, you know, just the sort of the, and of course health and safety's added an element into our sort of modern society that can sometimes be a bit overdone as well. But
yeah, so the governance can be a two-edged sword. I mean, you know, there's a kind of a point at which you can be trying to be so perfect, and it's costing so much to be so perfect, and then along comes a tsunami or COVID or something else, and suddenly everything's thrown up in the air, and the priorities have to be different.
Well, it's sort of, well, yes, I mean, that's probably a bit different, because I'm thinking back on your playgrounds again. The other thing that's a standard practice which gets up people's noses is there's always a cost overrun. We had a children's playground in Devonport, was a refurbishment of the old one, and it cost, what was supposed to cost $1 million, and wound up costing $1.5 million. And it was okay, it's a jazzy, nice playground, but the kids don't really care. The old one was perfectly okay. And they had a sort of perhaps modernised it a bit and repainted everything and put in another swing, it probably would have been. But it's this edifice complex again. I mean, I was in the heritage world, there's a guy called Sir Neil Cossens, who's a very prominent British heritage guy, he's the head of English heritage, and also Iron Bridge, which was one of their major industrial museums. And he said most boards have an edifice complex. They spend more time on the design of the actual building than the collections that go into it. And you know, that's the same with the councils. Everything's got to be glossy and muralised and whatever, instead of a functional playground that kids can have fun on. It gets unnecessary icing on the cake.
Well, there are some back-to-basics examples, though, that have worked well. So in recent times, I was at an opening of a playground in Mount Roskill, and that playground is based, the only one of its kind in New Zealand. It's based on a traditional Māori playground concept for children, and it cost $150,000 compared with $750,000 for the average for a playground in Auckland.
Well, that's the point. I mean, kids are kids. It's the old story. Yeah, the kids sometimes get more fun out of the box the present comes in than the present itself. It's sort of, it's always intrigued me, particularly, you know, when you sort of, I suppose my age, when I used to play down the Devonport playground, they had a great big roundabout thing, which now would be a health and safety risk of some magnitude, but everybody went on it, and in a slide or two, and swings, and seesaws. You don't seesaws anymore. They're probably a health and safety risk. Somebody might get their toe squashed. It's, the modern trend. Of course, the other factor too, you've got contractors that are designing these things, and they're all on pretty hefty things, and you also find there's quite a big contingency built into it, so the whole thing sort of escalates just on its own accord. Anyway, yes, we're sort of probably shifting a bit.
The interesting thing with this playground that I was at the opening of is that it actually had It was a very good example of community building because the contractor actually was able to make some savings in their bigger park development project, and they were able to put those savings into the playground. They actually kept rocks from the daylighting of the creek, and those rocks, they were able to incorporate those in the design. And they had the kids design the artwork. So the kids painted onto the tree trunks and stumps. And so this is a traditional Māori playground that emphasised jumping and balancing and working with rope and stepping on different heights of logs. Yep. And so it could be used for team building for adults as well as for children.
Are we getting too sophisticated again? You see, one of
not too sophisticated. This was a highly successful example of community building, low-cost initiative, everybody coming in together, the developers sharing their surplus with the community, the children and being involved in the design and so on. So it became a very sought-after place to go to. It was highly successful in that it just became a talking point. And, of course, lots of education processes. There's an outdoor classroom there. There's a whālei. There's an artwork that's quite unique by a Polynesian artist, really Philippe Tohi. Really, it's quite fabulous. And it will, I think, when it's properly promoted, it will become something even more.
This is perhaps the point I make. I put a proposition to council a couple of years ago when they talked about South Auckland not having many kids' playgrounds. Because playgrounds are very simple things, basically. I said, look, why don't you go along to Unitech, get them to make the swings and the structure, get the local sort of community kids, the Rotary Club or Lions, to put them together. And you could build little sort of corner section playgrounds all over the place. And of course, kids don't really care as long as they can swing or they can climb. So the sophisticated element is a second phase. And I thought, particularly in South Auckland, where they said there was a shortage, and of course the other thing that intrigued me at the time that's always sort of concerned me, where so many kids in South Auckland haven't been to the beach. And I actually suggested to Arthur Nye, and he was on the council, saying, look, we should get Auckland Transport to run a beach bus from Otara to Narrow Neck or to Long Bay, because a lot of the Pacific community come over to Long Bay and to Narrow Neck. And I said, there should be a bus where people can just, you know, it leaves at 9 o'clock in the morning and sort of goes to the beach, comes back at 3. And that didn't go anywhere either. So it's sometimes it's...
I disagree with that, because MERC, the Sir Peter Blake Trust sponsored development at Long Bay, they have made it their business to provide education for South Auckland children, and they bring them by bus to MERC.
Yeah, I know MERC well, but I mean, that's different. I'm just talking about kids going to the beach on a sunny Sunday. It's just a simple pleasure of going to the beach with the family.
It's free for the children on buses now lots of people can take them.
What I'm saying, like you talked about getting here on 4 buses, and I was saying, well, there should be a bus that left from Otara going to Long Bay Beach. So it sets off full of kids and mums and dads and drops them off and then picks them up at 3 o'clock and brings them home again. You don't have to go into town and change and go to sort of Takapuna and change and go to Torbay and change. Just a direct beach bus, exactly that. And it was so simple, would have worked, but just wasn't picked up as an idea or nothing. That's the point. What I'm trying to get at, it's a sophistication in playgrounds. So we're lucky on the shore. We've got playgrounds that have been there for 70, 80 years, and the kids still are quite happy on the swings and the roundabouts and whatever. Anyway, so that sort of shifted direction a bit, but yeah.
So let's go back to the budget. The council was planning to borrow some money in order to invest in what it has to do around changes to do with the environment, to do with climate change, to do with emergency management, to do with water quality, and so on. So these areas that they have outlined why these reasons they've outlined why they need to borrow, and interest rates are low, and they think that they can still stay within the envelope of accountability in terms of not losing their Standard and Poor's rating. Do you think that they really should go ahead and do this borrowing? How do you feel about it?
Well, the whole thing, once again, is a very complex exercise. And, of course, the one thing is that they do have this borrowing, sort of worried about their interest rate. But then the Auckland Council also lost $1.6 billion in the derivatives market. So it's sort of, yeah, it's a highly specialised area. And, of course, the key problem they won't face up to is, I mean, once the core problem, of course, is another 261,000 people coming. The infrastructure's behind now. Mm. And we're short of houses, and they need innovative solutions. And the other thing that they won't face up to is having development levies, because they say, oh, if you have a development levy, that'll put the price of houses up. So you get into these catch-22 situations. Mm. And of course, they need some sort of, which outside their row here, but it's, they need a capital gains tax. There's people making millions on these developments and contributing nothing to the sort of infrastructure needs of the city. So the whole, and the council's a sort of court, and it's a sort of a, and there's a whole failure of councils. Auckland sort of looked like Wellington and sort of, you know, Tauranga and Christchurch are all sort of, you know, sort of there at the governance level are starting to have difficulties. We don't have that in Auckland, but it's sort of the whole concept of the local authorities in New Zealand is in a pretty bad state. And, of course, it's going to get worse, because they've only got these problems with the climate warming and the water quality and things that are now people expect to be fixed.
Yeah, I think the difficulty is that in some cases there just hasn't been enough money put aside to remedy infrastructure failure from the past.
Well,
and
yeah,
that has got its own set of costs. And then we've got to invest in new stuff to be innovative and to keep ahead of climate change, emissions changes and so on. Because it costs money to change to electric buses. It's not
the point is perhaps the modern sort of generation expect everything to happen at once. I mean, I'm just thinking back. I mean, and they say, oh, the Harbour Bridge, it only had four lanes. You should have built it with eight. And I said, well, holy hell. You know, it's sort of, that was paid for by the ratepayers of the day at 2.6 shillings a shot. And, of course, they had the same problem then. They probably should have built it bigger. They did make the thing they built it, it's solid, so they could put the clip-ons on, because they built it so it could take Centurion tanks. Mm. It was built for, and if there was a war, you could sort of move your tanks across it. So that was a sort of mixed blessing. But, and it's like when I was in East Coast Bays in the 70s, we had the highest rates in New Zealand because the council was buying all the beachfront residential properties. And that's what they were doing. Now they're criticised because they didn't do enough. I mean, the rates were probably that much, weren't much lower than what they are now. And it's sort of this expectation that everything's got to be done. And, of course, that's where you get into the local things, like in North Shore City. They completely renewed all their sewerage system, split out the stormwater. They rebuilt the sort of the wastewater facilities plant, the sewage plant, put a special new pipe out to sea, and that was all ticking along fine. They put in the northern busway. And, of course, suddenly, of course, the amalgamation, it's all being loaded with all the stuff from West Auckland, and the rates in the North Shore are probably, there's a little grizzle, I think, actually last night, there they say, well, look, we've done all the good things, and now all the money's disappearing into the Auckland City with their sort of great big sort of new sort of sewage interceptor thing and the rail project, which of course doesn't benefit the North Shore at all. So there's issues like that where the sort of the, and of course the other focus that we have now is the business rates have been going down progressively. Whereas a residential way, it's been a shift, which is, I don't think is quite right, but I mean that's, and I think they're still in this one, there's still a drop 1% in the business rate.
At least. Yeah. So in the initial suggestion that it would be 3.5%, and then now with this revision post-COVID, it's going to be 5%.
Yeah.
But when you actually look at the fine print, anybody whose house is over 990,000 is going to actually pay more. more than that. You're going to pay 5.3% or, And, you know, when you think about it, there's not many houses under $1 million on the shore at all, anywhere, really.
And that's what you think. I mean, because it could be, I think, the last revaluation, because I live in Devonport on the coast, and because their rates originally went up with a great jump. But then, of course, the median price shifted in the inner city in South Auckland. So our rates might actually went down slightly. But the people in Mangere and Otahuhu's went up by whatever, 15%.
This is the problem of amalgamation, and the model we've got really hasn't enhanced local democracy. It hasn't allowed for community building strongly enough, and community cohesion is at risk, I think, with the sudden influx of so many people, and whether they're immigrants, migrants, refugees, or Kiwis returning home, they've still got to integrate into the community. And how is that going to get facilitated? If your Pāniku commercial arm of the council sells off community facilities and halls and meeting places, will the community have enough opportunity to meet together, because they're not going to meet on their front lawns?
Well, of course, that's a particular problem of the senior community that I'm involved with, like other senior citizens associations, which started in the 60s when they were building community halls and things when the city was developing. And they built them as halls, you'd have dances and concerts and meetings. And certainly on our sort of, we've got three of them still there. And of course, but they're struggling in the modern environment. And because their members are getting older, their activity levels aren't terribly sophisticated, and yet they own their own property. Like Devonport, where we got the Harmony Hall, and it was going to collapse, and so Gropeout stepped in, and Takapuna was the same. And the point we've made is that the council must recognise the value of these communities and support them.
Yeah, and so that's where the rubber hits the road, in essence, because if communities are feeling that they aren't heard well enough, and if they don't have space to meet and get their voices heard out there, if they don't have opportunities to build networks, then they're not strong enough to look after one another when there is a disaster. Because that's what we found all around the world, whether it's Japan, Christchurch, Kaikoura, any of these emergency disaster areas, the people who've done the best out of the recovery, the people who've managed to get the economies going and so on, they have been in communities that were well networked and well resourced.
Yeah,
and it's that networking. It's not so much resourced economically and with funds and everything. It's how well people know each other.
Know the community. Exactly.
So we're drawing now towards the end of the program, and I just have to say that this is, we've had International Women's Day on the 8th of March, and we've had a number of writers and poets and former politicians and, you know, all sorts of people weighing in with ideas about what has to happen and what needs to happen and how do we close gaps and how do we get better gender balance in the health system and so on. So we will be doing a program on this. So that'll be coming up on the 21st of March. And we've got Neighbours Day coming up. And this is a great opportunity. It operates over a week or 10 days, and there are lots of things happening right across the city and in your locality. So look at www.neighboursday.org.nz for ideas of what's happening locally around you. So thank you, Bill, for coming in.
Pleasure.
And we'll look forward to hearing from you again when we see what is actually finally proposed.
Yes, we've got weight and breaths. I'm getting old and mumbly.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting just to see how the issue of tree protection gets dealt with, because that, I think, is very hot right now. But we've already dealt with that on several occasions, so we're going to follow that up. Thanks for listening and being with us, and we'll look forward to having you again with us shortly.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6 or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
I've said it too many times before, and I said I'd never say it again, and I guess I shouldn't say anything at all.